Okay, here we go. So I am interviewing today my mother, Sue Kirshner. Thank you for doing this, Mom. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So hopefully we have some great conversations and we learn some new stories. Can you start off by telling me your full name?
As on my birth certificate?
Yes, please.
Dale, Day, oops, spelled wrong.
It's okay.
Dale Suzanne, Suzanne Bender, Bender.
So, what was the story behind your name? Because you go by Sue,
Right.
not by Dale.
Right. I was named after my uncle Dale, and my parents never intended to call me Dale. So I have traditionally, most of my life, gone by first initial D, Suzanne Kirshner. And as a child, my nickname was Susie, and as I became an adult, I switched to Sue.
Okay. Well, now when I was born, did you have the intention to have me have the same exact initials as you? Was that part of the plan?
I think I did.
Okay.
I think I did. But the thing was, I wanted to call you, maybe I didn't. I really wanted to call you Scott. And your father wanted to name you after his brother David. So then you became David Scott. So I guess I didn't. I thought I did, but no, I didn't.
I thought it was going to be Doug.
I also like Doug. I liked Douglas a lot. But David Douglas didn't sound good.
No. Okay.
But Douglas was my all-time favorite boy's name, and there was a reason for that.
And Dad put the kibosh on that.
Right.
Okay.
He definitely wanted to name you after his brother David, and I'm glad I did. But the reason I loved the name Doug so much is because there was a really cute guy that used to drive up and down 12th Street in a fancy Corvette, and his name was Doug.
Okay. What were your parents' names? My grandparents.
My dad was Charles Edwin Bender, and my mother, before she married him, was Ada Madge White, and she went by A. Madge White. So she always went by Madge.
She went by her middle name as well.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Now, do you know how they met?
During the war, my father was in the Army in World War II, and he at one point was stationed in Plymouth, England, and my mother was 19 years at the time, and they met at what they called the Hoe. I think it's spelled HOE, but it's down at the dock in Plymouth at the border. And Plymouth was bombed very, very, very heavily because of the U.S. Base there. And my mother would tell me stories about the bombing. And I used to feel very, very, very frightened. And she said she never was frightened because her parents handled it so well. Whenever there was an air raid, they just all very calmly went under the stairs and stayed there until the air raid stopped. But for me, as a child, I remember feeling very, very frightened and very scared of war because of the stories I heard about it.
Oh, wow. Now, do you remember her parents' names?
Yes. Well, my mother's mother died in childbirth, giving birth to her. And this was in Wales.
1925.
In 1925, she was born May 10th, 1925. And she lived in a town in Wales called Abergavenny. And her father, who was Theodore White, met an Englishwoman who was a midwife, I think they call them, that can deliver babies. And he met her, and they all moved to England when my mom was two. And then she grew up in Devon, which is like a county, specifically most of the time in Plymouth. And what was the rest of that question? Oh, and anyway, so then the woman he married, the woman that raised my mother, her name was Maud.
Okay.
Yeah.
Reminds me of B. Arthur.
Yeah.
Now, what about your father's parents?
Okay, I never met my grandfather, and neither did my mother meet him because he died before she arrived in this country. He worked, his name was George Bender. And he worked for the Reading Eagle. He was a typesetter. And my grandmother, his wife, was Molly, although her real name was Mary. Mary Geneva. Her last name was Zug, Zug. And that particular family is from Switzerland. So they were married, but he died fairly young. And I'm not sure what from. Might have been alcoholism.
So she's where I get my Swiss blood and my Ancestry.com profile.
Right.
Interesting.
Right. And supposedly her mother, my great-grandmother, dated Milton Hershey.
Wow.
And the stories about her, and her name was Minnie, was that she was always dressed to the nines, an attractive woman. And anyways, the rumor was that she dated Milton Hershey. Don't know if it's true.
Maybe that inspired the Hershey kiss.
Maybe. You never know.
How about your siblings? Can you name all your siblings?
Yep. My older sister is Ann, and she's Barbara Ann, B. Ann. She goes by her middle name. She was born in England. And she and my mother came over to this country on the Queen Mary. Then my next sister is Pamela Diane. She goes by her first name. And she was born in this country, the first of us to be born in this country. And then there's me. And then there's my sister Jill. And then she's Jillian Ann. And then my sister Jackie, who's Jacqueline Ann. And we were all 2 years apart. And then 6 years later, my mom had a son, and his name is Eric Charles. And then 2 years later, another son, Jeffrey Stephen. And Jeffrey is spelled G-E-O-F-F-R-E-Y, the British way. And my brother Jeffrey has always resented that they chose to spell it the British way. And an interesting story about my mother when I was growing up is that she always was digging this country and always comparing England and the United States and America. And, of course, England was always better at everything. They didn't have litter like our country has litter. They didn't have litter. It was always one thing after another. And I grew up not liking England and never wanting to go. But when I became an adult, I realized that my mom was just homesick. That she really, I don't think, really didn't dislike this country. She was just homesick. And I finally did go to England and fell in love with it and went another 6 times.
Did Nana ever get back to England?
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Yep.
Did she get to reunite with family?
Yes. Well, she only ever had one brother who was a half-brother. That's my Uncle Glenn. And he still lives in England, but he lives on the other side of the country. He's in up close to Scotland in an area called Harrogate.
Is he significantly younger than Nana?
9 years younger.
Okay.
Yeah, 9 years younger.
But he's he must be getting up there then.
Yeah.
Uncle Glenn.
Uncle Glenn.
Now, can you tell me about a time that you got in trouble as a child?
When I tore down the. Okay. My good friend Dickie Blatt and I were snooping around at a property that had a do not trespass sign on it. We lived out in the country, a place called Mount Pleasant, 4 miles before Burnville. And for some reason, we tore down a do not trespassing sign, and we thought we were in big, big trouble. And we were hiding in the barn and talking about what we were going to do when we got in trouble, and it was very stressful.
I bet.
But it was silly because we weren't in trouble, and we just didn't realize that.
How old were you at the time?
Oh, I'm going to have to guess 9 or 10. I don't remember. Old enough to read.
So, okay, you grew up in Mount Pleasant, and then you moved to the city of Reading.
We moved to the city of Reading when I just completed 8th grade at Penn Burnville, and my parents didn't drive, and my mother told my father, either you get a car and learn to drive, or we move to the city. So we moved to the city. So we moved to a little house on Green Street, a little row home, and there were 9 of us, 7 kids and my parents.
How many bedrooms was it?
2 bedrooms.
Oh, geez.
2 bedrooms, and there was an attic. So all 5 of the girls slept in the attic, and it was divided. It was almost like 2 rooms, Ann and Pam on one side. No, I think so. And me, Jill, and Jackie on the other. But anyways, it was a small house, 1 bathroom. You had like 6 or 7 minutes in the bathroom every day. Like my time was like from 8 o'clock to 6 minutes after 8.
Wow, and that shower and everything.
Yeah, well, there was no showers, bathtub.
Okay.
Yeah. It was tough.
Wow.
Yeah.
So how did you get out?
Out of the house?
Out of the house.
I got married.
Wow, tell me that story.
Okay. Well, 9 people living in a tiny little row home, it was just constant fighting and battling.
Sure.
And I couldn't wait to get out. And I was at my best friend's house. Her name was Joan Tallarico. And I was there with my boyfriend, Tony. And we'd been going together for quite a while. And she just said, why don't the two of you just get married and you can get out of the house? And that's what we did. It only lasted 2 years.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Is Tony still around? Do you ever hear from him?
I never hear from him, but he is up in Montrose, Pennsylvania. And he married a woman and moved up there and had a nice family. And anyways, he and I weren't meant to be together.
Mm-hmm.
And I met your father.
Okay.
Joe Ingram. And we were together 4 years. And becoming pregnant was the happiest day of my life, but I lost that first baby. But just a very short time later, I became pregnant again, and that's when I had you. And that was probably the happiest day of my life.
Wow. Until my sister came along.
And that was another happy day. And
so my father left when I was probably 1.5, is that right?
Something like that. Yeah, yeah, that's about right. And that's when I met...
Where did you live then, when it was just you and I?
I lived in a house on Gordon Street.
Okay. And how did you get the house, just being a single mother?
Well, I rented from my boss. I worked for an attorney, and he and Dr. Hassler owned the Hassler home, a nursing home, and they had properties in the city. And they agreed to rent a house to me for $25 a month.
Oh, my goodness.
And he completely remodeled it. So it was very nice. And that's where you spent just a couple of years. And that's when I worked for that attorney. That's how I came to...
Did you mention his name?
Paul Edelman.
Paul Edelman, okay.
Okay.
I think he has a bench now in Wyomissing Park.
Yes, he does. Well, he was the president of Wyomissing Borough for many, 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 many years. He was a good person. And then he ended up selling the house to Dad and I very reasonably. And because we had that house, then we were able to sell it ourselves and buy a lot in Ole and build the home in Ole. So it just kind of all got it, the whole thing started. But how I met my current husband of 42 years, your dad, is he came into my attorney's office for a divorce, and that's how we met.
Well, he is actually my stepdad, but then
he adopted me.
In, I think, 83 or 84.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, and your dad had passed away.
Right, so, in 82, I believe.
Yeah. Because he had said he'd never let him adopt him, but once he had passed away, we were...
Yeah, he didn't really have a choice anymore.
No, no. And I know in my heart he would have wanted what was best for you.
Sure.
Yeah. The Ingrams were very, very nice people.
Mm-hmm. How was it, though, when he passed for you? How did that affect you?
Oh, that's a good question. I just felt very sad for his family. Very sad. He was only 37.
Right.
So I know this interview isn't about you, but that 37 had to be scary for you.
It was a very scary year for me.
Yeah.
I'm glad it's 7 years behind me.
Yeah. So... Anyways, and the other thing about him was he had 2 brothers, one maybe 2 years older than him and one maybe 2 years younger than him. And I'm not sure about that. It's no more than 2, but 1 or 2 years. And they both passed away young also. The only person left is his youngest sibling, who is a girl, Jeannie.
Mm-hmm.
And she's fine. So
let's move on to Kevin, my stepdad. How did you two meet?
He came into my boss for a divorce.
Oh, wow.
And he asked me to lunch.
Uh-huh.
And I said, I have to be honest with you. I already read your file, and I'm 5 years older than you. And he said, I'm just asking you to lunch. I'm not asking you to marry me. So we go to a restaurant called Maury's, and we're walking down the street, and he's singing. And I thought, oh, what a wacko. But I ended up really liking his singing. He used to sing all the time, in the car all the time. And that's one thing I miss. He doesn't sing anymore. Once in a while, but he used to sing all the time, and I miss it.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I kind of inherited that from him, too. I enjoy singing as well. I'm not very good at it, but I do it because I enjoy it.
Well, he was really good. He was in a band in high school. In fact, all the members of that band, with the exception of him, still do it for a living.
I think he was a drummer.
He was a drummer and vocalist.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think it was The Sounds of Tranquility was the name of the band, if I remember
right.
Yeah,
yeah. But he's the only one that didn't continue in the music business. But he used to have a voice, not so much anymore, but he used to be quite good.
Wow. So when you worked for Attorney Edelman in General Battery, how long did you work for him?
Oh, like 31 years.
31 years.
Yep. Yep. And when we started the restaurant, he was very happy for me. He was very sad when I left, but he was very happy for me. And he died maybe a year later. That was very unexpected and very devastating to me, because he had been a main force in my life for over 30 years.
He was probably more of a father to you than your actual father.
Absolutely. No doubt about it. He was very good to me. Yep. He was a friend.
Wow.
Yeah.
His whole family, too, I think he used to... They had a huge house in Wyomissing.
Yep, 9 bathrooms.
Oh, my goodness, a house of 9 bathrooms.
And when he'd go away, when he and his wife would go on trips, which they did quite frequently, at least two or three times a year, I would move into their house, lock, stock, and barrel, and just take care of the house and the household and the cleaning ladies and all those things, all those duties. And I didn't work at the office when he'd be gone. And that would be like maybe 10 days to 2 weeks. And I loved it.
I remember sleeping in one of their bedrooms, one of the boys, and I remember he had a fish tank.
Oh, yeah.
Which son was that?
That was probably George.
George, yeah. Well, yeah. I think you called him Georgie.
Georgie, yeah. Yeah, he's now a physical therapist with his own business down in Delaware.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah, they were all nice children. All his kids were nice kids.
And I remember swimming in the pool. They had a nice big in-ground
pool. Beautiful pool. Oh, beautiful pool. Yeah.
And you cutting down rhubarb to make rhubarb pie.
Yeah, I made a lot of rhubarb pies back then. They had a ton of rhubarb.
Well, I got to tell you are a hell of a baker.
Well, thank you.
You're the reason, one of the reasons that contributed to my weight, I think, testing all of your new recipes.
And but, I still like to develop recipes.
And you are very, very good at it.
Well, thank you.
So let's talk about the restaurant. Dad used to have farmers markets, and that kind of...
Yes.
Stands at a farmer's market, and that kind of developed into the restaurant.
Right.
So when did that all start?
Well, we'll be celebrating in less than a month, 22 years at Cloud 9 Cafe. We started it 22 years ago.
And so 1997.
And it's the year we opened, December 6th, 1997. And now we're going to be selling right around the same time, hopefully.
Wow, December.
Yeah, well... We want to settle by November 30th. Whether that'll happen, I don't know. But it'll be somewhere right around 22 years that we will have owned Cloud 9 Cafe. And the interesting thing about it, every once in a while people say, how did you come up with a name? We just could not come up with a name. We just we tried everything. We thought, oh, this is it. And so many silly, goofy names, and nothing worked. And we went to a seminar in San Diego for 3 days. And... to prepare for opening this restaurant that we still didn't have a name for. And we got off the plane and we're looking for transport to go to our hotel. And there was a transport that was called Cloud 9. And I looked at Dad and I said, that's our name. We're going to be Cloud 9 Cafe. And he said, you're right. And
wow.
We never looked back. We never hesitated. We had been spending weeks and weeks and weeks trying to figure out a name for our place, and we could not come up with anything. And we knew instantly that was it. And never regretted it.
Very cool story.
Yeah.
So 1997, you opened up the restaurant.
1997.
Oh, right, 1997. So you then pretty much took over all the baking, and Dad was pretty much in charge of all the cooking. Is that right?
Right. Well, what happened was when we opened, I was still working for Mr. Edelman, and we had a baker who had worked for Dad at the deli stand. And
who was that?
Chris Dalbert.
Okay.
And she quit a couple months down the road, and she really wasn't doing a very good job. And Dad said to me, why don't you be our baker? And I said, because I only do old-fashioned homemade grandma kind of baking. And he said, maybe people will like that. And guess what? They did. So never looked back with that either. And I love what I do. I have been baking now for 22 years, and I still love it.
Baking professionally, too,
right,
22 years.
Right, right. Yeah, at the office, I was always the one that brought the baked goods.
Right.
But, and I still like to develop recipes. And a lot of people say, well, where do you get your ideas from? Well, a lot of times just on the internet, Facebook. And with most recipes, I tweak them. I'll make them once, and I'm usually not happy the first time. Rarely am I happy the first time. And I'll tweak it until I'm happy with the recipe, and then I'll use it. And a lot of times I'll do it for a while, and then I don't do it anymore, and I'll come up with something else. I like to switch it up.
Well, you understand some of the science behind it, too. If you add a little bit of this, you got to take a little bit of that away. It's a lot different from cooking, where
right.
you need to be exact.
Right, right.
And not so much for, you can, when you're cooking, you can do it to taste.
I really wish I did understand the science behind it more. I really do. I think I could even do more if I understood the science, but I only understand a little
bit.
But
I think you understand some of the nuances more than like
sure.
the average layperson would.
Oh, well, yeah, sure. And just like with anything that you, I'm not going to say get good at, because I don't want to say I'm good at it, but you get the feel. There's a feel for baking, and I think in a lot of professions and interests that people have, to get a feel for what they're working with. And I think with baking, you do too.
Well, now, you might do the grandma baking at Cloud 9 Cafe, but I think in the early 2000s, you opened up Cloud 9 Bistro in
right.
West Reading, where you did more of the higher-end, more sophisticated contemporary desserts.
And I did, and I loved it. I was very, very, very fortunate to train with a gal by the name of Ellen Hatch, who was a pastry chef from Philadelphia, and she was rated the number one pastry chef in Philadelphia. Philadelphia by Philadelphia chefs, not pastry chefs, chefs.
Wow.
All the restaurant chefs voted, and she was named best pastry chef. And she was kind enough to come up to Reading and train me one-on-one and shared her recipes with me. So I did very high-end desserts at Cloud 9 Bistro, and I made all our ice creams and sorbets.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah.
You made the absolute best creme brulee.
Thank you.
I still fantasize about the dessert.
Well, the funny thing about that is we had a couple that was a customer who traveled all over the country and made it a point to go to the best restaurants in the country. And they told me that my creme brulee was better than the creme brulee at the French Laundry in California, which was like one of the very top restaurants in the country. And they said, your creme brulee is better than the French Laundry's creme brulee.
That texture, that custard was just the best.
And I had a secret, and I never shared it back then, but I would now. The cream, a culture heavy cream, of course, it wasn't right for me when I used just, you know, pasteurized heavy cream, but then I tried just using homogenized heavy cream, and it still wasn't the texture I wanted, so I did half and half, and the texture was perfect. And that's what you're talking about, was the texture. It was a combination of homogenized heavy cream and pasteurized heavy cream.
Wow, a Sue Kirshner secret.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. And you know this is recording, right?
Yeah. Yep. We had a doc that used to come in and order it for appetizer and then for dessert too. He's an orthopedic surgeon. Dr. David Reese.
Okay, I know Dr. Reese.
Yeah.
That is so cool. And the bread pudding. How did you come up with that? I think it was called Manhattan.
Manhattan bread pudding. I told Alan that I wanted to do a bread pudding that had every element of the Manhattan, in, which was my favorite
cocktail. The Manhattan cocktail.
It was my favorite cocktail and still is. And so we came up with a recipe and made a bourbon sauce to top it with. And I used that same combination of heavy cream in the custard part of it. Had maraschino cherries very finely chopped throughout it. And it was an amazing dessert. That and the creme brulee were probably the most popular, but everything Ellen gave me in her recipes, everything was wonderful. We had a 75% of the diners got dessert, which
yeah.
is a really high number. Yeah, it was pretty cool. It was a neat place.
And even your Almond Joy ice cream was really, really good.
Well, I made a chocolate sorbet and then a coconut sorbet. And then I combined them. I made a chocolate bowl. I blow up balloons and made chocolate bowls and served it in that. And then I think I topped it with a, what's the chocolate sauce? Ganache. Chocolate ganache. I make chocolate ganache all the time, and I couldn't remember. I use that for my cheesecakes.
And you also made a chocolate gâteau.
Yes.
Yeah. That was flourless chocolate
cake.
Yep.
And I made a raspberry sauce to serve that with.
Oh, yeah. Amazing. Yeah. I miss those days. When did the bistro close?
Well, we sold it. Oh, my goodness. We only had it for like maybe 2 years because the people we had turned the cafe over to run the bistro, so we could run the bistro, didn't do a good job, and so that was failing. So we didn't want to split. One of us go to the bistro and one of us go to the cafe, so we decided to sell the bistro reluctantly, but we did, and went back to the cafe, and we're very, very fortunate that we were able to get it back to the way it used to be. So that's the story on that. And now I'm back to the cafe, and I'm just doing my grandma business with the homemade cookies and chocolate cakes and carrot cakes, but now in the past couple of years I started doing cheesecakes.
Yeah, you make some fabulous, pretty fancy cheesecake. Definitely not a grandma style.
Well,
cheesecake.
I really love making the cheesecakes. And we make a lot of dessert trays, and I make them so that I make them in square pans so I can cut them into little squares and put on my dessert trays.
So when you're developing a recipe, how do you know how to tweak it?
Just by taste. I've always been one, whether it's cooking or baking, if there's supposed to be an ingredient in there, I want to know what's in there. You know, you go into a fancy restaurant and it touts this ingredient and that ingredient, you get the plate and you can't see it, you don't taste it. When I do cooking or baking, you're going to know it's there. Yeah. Flavors mean a lot.
Absolutely. Is there anything you're currently working on?
I'm always making new recipes. I just did a new one, and your wife really liked it. It's not my own recipe. It's a ricotta cheese, chocolate chip orange cookie. It's an Italian cookie, and it's really going over very well with people. And I didn't have to tweak that. That's one recipe I didn't have to tweak. And that's another interesting thing. When customers ask me if I will share a recipe, if it's a recipe that I got from somewhere and it's not my recipe, I share it every time. If it's something I took a lot of trouble and developed, then I'm hesitant to share it.
Do you share my Dutch cocoa recipe?
Yes, because that's not my recipe. Your sister, I took that cookie to her office, which is now Reading Durham, and she said, oh, everybody loves that chocolate cookie. Would you share the recipe? And she didn't think I would because she knows I generally don't. I said, absolutely, it's not my recipe. I said, I got it from your brother, but it's a copycat recipe. And I did send it to her, and they were very grateful.
No, that's great.
Yeah.
It is such a very good cookie.
It is a really good cookie.
Everybody in my office asks for it all the time as well.
Well, I have to tell you, you might want to take the new one because Beth Hannon said that they liked the orange chocolate chip one even more than the Dutch chocolate cookie.
Oh, no. Yeah. I've got competition.
Yep.
Let's go back to that again, Kevin. How did he propose? Do you remember?
No. I think we just both decided we wanted to get married. And we were together 6 months when we got married. No more than 6 months. I do remember how your father, Joe Ingram, proposed. He actually asked my father.
Did he
if
really?
If he could marry me, yeah. He was very traditional.
Pop-Pop, happy for you to move on?
Well, you know, Pop-Pop, he was always a teaser. I'm sure he made a joke out of it. I don't remember. I don't remember his reaction.
One of my first memories, actually, is being in like a little playpen crib kind of thing, and you coming home from the hospital with Kelly, my sister.
Okay.
I don't remember who was watching me, but I remember being in the crib or playpen in our house in Gordon Street.
Okay. Well, as you know, your sister didn't come home from the hospital until a week later.
Right.
So I don't remember who was taking care of you during that period of time. I think Ann helped out with you. I think you stayed at her house for a bit until Kelly actually came home. She was down at St. Christopher's for a week. But playpens back then, I don't know, do they use playpens anymore? I don't think so much.
Yes, they're called pack and plays.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah.
I forgot. Yes, yes, yes.
Yep.
They've been around for a while.
Yep, for a couple of years.
Yeah.
So what happened with Kelly and her birth?
When she was born, it was, I felt so good because I had what they called back then natural childbirth. So when I had you, I had a saddle block, which I regretted later because they don't give that to you till you're actually ready to deliver. So you go through all the pain and agony anyways, then you have to recuperate from that. So I didn't do it that time. So I felt really, really good after she was born and Dad kissed me goodbye and went home. And then the doctor came in and he said, your baby is fine, except she has a tumor in her throat the size of a walnut.
Holy moly.
At which point I got hysterical. And he said, hold up, maybe not walnut, maybe not walnut. And he gets out his little finger and puts a mark right at the first joint. Maybe not walnut, this big. And it was a lot smaller than a walnut.
Like the tip of your pinky finger.
Right. And of course, I called your father, crying. He couldn't understand what I was saying. He realized he had to come back. And they took her by ambulance to Philadelphia, to St. Christopher's.
It was in a helicopter, wasn't it?
No, it was by ambulance. But I was supposed to go in the ambulance with her. However, I didn't because I got very, very, very ill. And when the nurse came in, I said to her, please tell me you didn't give me codeine. I'm very, very allergic to it. And she looked at the chart and she said, yeah, we gave you codeine.
Oh, no.
Yeah. And she saw that it was marked that they weren't supposed to give me codeine. So I was too ill to go in the ambulance. So Dad and I had to follow the ambulance. And that was, I'll never forget that. That was a horrible, horrible day.
I bet.
Yeah. But she turned out all right. And it wasn't a tumor at all. Just excess skin. And they removed it. And the one thing I do remember about when we went down there with her was there was this huge room that she was in that was like intensive care for newborns. And those babies all looked like little birds that fell out of a tree. But do you remember when you were a kid, remember you'd see a little bird on the ground that would, you know, no feathers, no nothing? That's what those babies looked like. It was horrible. And unfortunately, Kelly was at the very back of the room. And we get to Kelly, who was an 8-pound, 7-ounce baby. She looked like a giant in that room with those other babies.
She's still a giant.
Yeah. She's tall. So anyways, that's what I remember about that day.
Well, it's a pretty amazing story. I mean, you weren't so sure that you were going to be the right person for this interview because you weren't sure you had many stories to share. This has been fabulous. I've learned a lot of new things that I didn't know already. So
good.
Well, thank you. This has really been awesome.
All right.
Is there anything else you would want to share before we conclude?
Well, I'm very, very thankful for the fact that both my children live in the area. I used to every once in a while grounce because that means complain. Kelly was going to move to Tuckerton, which was, you know, 15 minutes away. And I'd have customers say, my daughter lives in California. Tuckerton's not so bad. So I'm very thankful that my children and my grandchildren live nearby and that I get to see them all the time.
Well, that brings up another point. I mean, we've talked about it a little bit earlier. When I joined the Navy right after high school,
I was really, really, really scared that something would happen to you.
Man, I was gone then for a few years, and I don't mean just a couple miles away. I got stationed in Guam for my first duty station.
And do you remember I wrote you like every day?
You did. You used to write about fancy meals and things you were baking, and here I am eating, you know, terrible Navy food.
Oh, I when you told me you were going into service, I was so scared. Because that goes back to, you know, my childhood. I was very frightened of war. You know, in elementary school, we had to go under our desks and, you know, practice for air raids and there were shelters that were built, you know, in case of a nuclear attack. And, you know, so when you said you wanted to go into service, I was so afraid something would happen to you.
Yeah.
So.
Well, Well, something did happen to me. I kind of grew up and
I
learned a lot of life lessons.
Yeah, the service was very, very good for you. I was okay with it when you told me it was the Navy.
Mm-hmm.
Navy or Air Force I was going to be okay with, but I could not have handled you going into the Marines or the Army.
I don't think I would have been able to handle that either.
So, how much more time do we have?
Well, I think we're just about done. Well,
okay.
Again, I really appreciate it and taking the time. I think I think you've been a great interviewee, and hopefully other people find it helpful as well. And
I enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, all right. Thank you. And this concludes it. Thank you.
All right. Bye. Okay.